Welcome to Alternative Realities, a podcast about the people, strategies, and stories driving the world of alternative investments. I'm Aaron Mulvihill, and my guest today is Brian Coleman, co-head of investments of the Private Credit Solutions Group within JP Morgan Asset Management. Brian has been at JP Morgan for over 25 years across multiple divisions and geographies. On today's episode, we'll be talking about private credit, an asset class that continues to be popular with investors due to its pickup in yield compared to traditional fixed income. But it does not come without risks. We'll discuss some of those risks in certain sectors with Brian, as well as the outlook ahead for private credit and opportunities outside of direct lending. It's a very timely conversation, so let's get right into it. Brian, before we dive in, could you give the audience a little bit of background on yourself and your career and how it led to your role today at JP Morgan Asset Management?
Yeah, sure, Aaron. So I joined JP Morgan out of business school 25 years ago now, and I've been based in the US, Singapore, and London. And I really started to concentrate on credit coming out of the global financial crisis. I was tasked with trying to find interesting distressed debt opportunities at that point, and there were plenty, and it was a real education in terms of seeing all the mistakes that people had made in the run-up to the financial crisis, so certainly a learning period. And then coming out of the financial crisis, obviously there was a lot of a lot tighter banking regulation and more onerous capital charges, and that led to the rise of private credit, and I've really been looking at private credit ever since then.
And for those who are new to the asset class of private credit, can you explain what private credit is and why the industry has grown so much in the last couple of decades and maybe how it compares to fixed income within investor portfolios?
Sure. So in terms of what it is, it's relatively simple. It's lending provided by a non-bank institution, including a private fund. It's a privately negotiated loan, so it's not issued into the market or traded in the public market. The loans tend to be bilateral in nature, so between the lender and the borrower, there may be a club deal. They're often very tailored to that specific borrower. And a big difference is that they're held to maturity as opposed to, again, just syndicated or distributed out and traded in the market. In terms of why this space has grown a lot, I alluded to it coming out of the GFC. The banks faced a lot more onerous capital charges, and that made it uneconomic oftentimes for them to hold loans that the regulator deemed more risky. And so that meant that they've stepped out of a lot of their traditional lending markets, and into that gap, private credit lenders have stepped. And then at the same time, on the investor side, obviously up until fairly recently, rates were essentially zero, and fixed income opportunities were very low yielding, and private credit offers a pickup in yield, so that made it extremely interesting for investors.
Mm-hmm. And now, of course, you've got rates coming down again. So with the growth in the asset class, there's been a lot of money poured in by investors, dry powder has accumulated. A question we often get from clients and investors is there too much money chasing too few deals? What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think in parts of the private credit market, and we'll get into how diverse private credit really is, but in parts, that's certainly the case. We've seen a lot of assets flow into direct lending, and that's particularly the case with retail money that's going into a handful of large direct lenders. And in the last few years, subsequent to 2022 especially, M&A volumes really been muted. So you have that supply-demand imbalance, which has led to a lot of pressure on spreads and documentation. And that's particularly acute in parts of the direct lending market. I think it's generally the case across credit markets, both public and private, frankly. That's really the outcome of those flows.
And with that, what's your outlook for private credit this year? And where do we see yields now that we've seen interest rates come down?
Yeah, so if you look right now, unlevered direct lending yields have come down from their peak. They're
roughly in the U.S. at least, they're in around the 9% range. I think if we look at base case returns on both an unlevered and a levered basis in direct lending, they're certainly lower than they were at the peak coming out of 2022, but they're still above pre-pandemic levels and above historical averages, given the base rates elevated. And direct lending, it pretty consistently offers a pickup versus the syndicated loan market and the high yield market, and that's the case right now. I think outside of direct lending, again, and we'll get into this in the asset-based finance space, there is competitive pressure, but I think it's less and spreads have tightened less. And there we're finding attractive net returns in the 10 plus range still.
So digging into that a little bit deeper, you talked about asset-backed finance. Can you explain what asset-backed finance is and why that's becoming a compelling opportunity set within private credit?
Yeah, so asset-backed finance, I mean, if you think about a bank does a lot of things besides lend to corporates, right? And so lending to corporates in the private credit world is direct lending. But a bank lends against commercial property. They make residential mortgage loans, they make consumer loans, et cetera. And asset-based finance is really all of those things outside of corporate. And it is not a new space by any stretch. We've been investing there for 15 plus years. It's a very big space, and there are many markets and markets within markets, if you will. So I think that the appeal from our perspective historically has been two things. First of all, it gives you the chance to make some relative value decisions if you're looking at the entire private credit universe, not just direct lending. And as I said, sometimes competitive pressures are more acute in one area versus another. And then the second thing is it allows you to kind of spread your bets, if you will, and not put all of your eggs in one basket. And if I go back to the bank analogy, Jamie Dimon always says JP Morgan has a fortress balance sheet. I think he's probably referring to the liability side, but if you look at the asset side, it is a fortress because it's so diversified across many different business lines and loan types that it's going to navigate through a difficult period. There's going to be times where something's not going to work for you, but it's not going to bring the whole house down.
Talking about difficult periods, we've had what they're calling the soft apocalypse or software apocalypse in the markets, and that's touched on private credit as well, because there's been a lot more financing of AI and other software deals within the private credit space. Can you give us your thoughts on that? I know it's kind of a developing story.
Yeah. So software is a big part of direct lending. It's call it 25% or so of the direct lending market. And it's obviously a developing risk, but I think it's a real risk. I think that one needs to make the distinction between different types of software. And so if we look at the broadly syndicated loan market today, we've seen some types of companies that are still trading close to par. Those are, to use the parlance of the software analysts, sticky system of record businesses like accounting systems or things that are really embedded and hard to replace. They seem to be doing fine still in terms of their pricing, but other types of software companies have gapped down on no news, as many as 20 points. And those are the types of things you would expect would be more vulnerable to software or to AI disruption. And so I think that we'll over time see the same type of phenomenon in direct lending. It's obviously not going to happen in a week, but over a number of years where some of these software loans are going to have a hard time and others will be fine. But as I said, it's pretty much a developing story.
And we're paying a very close attention to it as well in the new guide to alternatives that we just released this week, we've got a chart on the sector composition of private credit, and looking at that tech part of the market is very substantial.
Yeah. And I think it's, I mean, not it goes without saying, but it's not confined to software, obviously. And there's a lot of businesses that could be disrupted by AI. And so it's something that all lenders right now are incorporating into their lending process and are very cognizant of, obviously.
Indeed. And how about distressed or special situations type opportunities, given we're in a potentially softening economic environment, though you wouldn't know it looking at the markets? Are there attractive opportunities within those kind of spaces for investors looking to diversify within private credit?
Yeah, I would say yes and no. I think that we always we like to partner with the firms that have a real distressed debt DNA. We try and partner now with firms that can toggle really between special situations lending and traditional purchasing of discounted paper in the secondary market, what you would think of as like your traditional distressed debt, because that latter strategy is very, very episodic, and there can be long extended periods where there's just not very much to do, and then all of a sudden there's a lot, and that window very often shuts quickly. So we find it's just better to have somebody that is able to toggle between those two strategies.
We talked about risks quite a lot on this discussion, and that's the nature of debt investing, I suppose. But a common question we get is, how do you evaluate risk within private credit? And if there's systematic risk within the industry, and how do you look at that scenario?
Yeah, well, I began by saying I started in credit coming out of the financial crisis. And so, you know, I lived through that. I personally, I don't think that the current private credit universe represents a systemic risk to the financial system the way that, say, subprime residential mortgages did back before the GFC. For a couple of reasons, I don't think it's fair to compare the quality of the underwriting at all. And second, that if you look at the holders for banks, they have exposure to direct lending because they're or private credit because they're lending to these non-bank originators, but it's at a very low attachment or look through LTV. So I think they're generally fine. And then outside the banking system, that risk is very well distributed and generally in hands of people that have there's no asset liability mismatch. So I'm not concerned from that perspective. But you know, to your other point, you're right. In credit, you only have downside. You have to be very, very focused on risk. I think to put a fine point on it, if you are scared of your shadow and you're all over every single potential thing that could go wrong, then you're probably going to be a better lender. And so that's one thing we're looking for.
Yeah, that's a good mentality to have. And you know, shifting now from talking about evaluating risks to evaluating managers, as with every alternative asset, manager selection is critical. How do you go about choosing a good manager, and what type of qualities do you look for in a good manager in the private credit space?
Sure. So lending in a way is simple because it's very much about process. And so process and the experience of being able to implement that and being disciplined around it. If you're a lender, you need to be good at sourcing. You need to be good at underwriting, at structuring. There's a capital markets component or a financing component to it very often. And then you need to be good at asset management or monitoring of those loans and working them out if they've gone wrong. And so, you know, we're looking for people that have the team and the bandwidth to effectively execute all of that, and that they've proven that they can do that over many years and through cycles, that they're disciplined around asset growth, because that is a challenge sometimes. And that, you know, as I said, that they're very focused on every single thing that could possibly go wrong. You know, as we saw with some recent frauds, which weren't really in the private credit space, but but First Brands and Tricolor that if you take your eye off the ball, then you can get burned. And so we're, you know, that's something that we're always very focused on.
Fantastic. Well, really enjoyed this discussion. Thank you for coming on Alternative Realities, Brian.
Yeah, my pleasure. Happy to do it.
That was Brian Coleman, co-head of investments in the Private Credit Solutions Group at JP Morgan Asset Management. To all our viewers and listeners, thank you very much for listening to the Alternative Realities podcast. You can download our recently released first quarter 2026 guide to alternatives at the JP Morgan Asset Management website at jpmorgan.com/GTA. And if you've not already done so, please subscribe to Alternative Realities on your favorite podcasting platform.
This material is for information purposes only. The views, opinions, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions are those of the speaker and may differ from those expressed by JP Morgan Asset Management or by other areas of JP Morgan Chase & Company. Any companies referenced are shown for illustrative purposes only and are not intended as a recommendation. We believe the information provided here is reliable but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors. This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. JP Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of JP Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.